Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This hour, we're coming to you live from the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI studio.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
First pitch, line drive, left field. This is trouble. It's going to get 2 runs home. It hits off the scoreboard. Boxed around by Benny. Here's the throw to second base, and too late. But in any event, a 2-run hit.
Recapping the Red Sox loss against the Orioles.
Swing and a miss, strike 3. Got him on a sinking fastball, and this one is over. The Orioles hand the Red Sox their first defeat of the young season. Both clubs now 1-1. The final, Baltimore 7, Boston 2.
Dial 617-779-7937. Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett. Right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
All right, well, pretty much the opposite of what you were looking for from your Red Sox this afternoon. Have this great opening night, and Nathan Eovaldi looks good. You're feeling good about your Red Sox. Eovaldi's going to be the number one for now until we find out what's going to happen with Eduardo Rodriguez as he's dealing with complications after dealing with COVID-19. And then this, a 7-2 loss to the Baltimore Orioles, who, let me remind you, won 54 games last year. This is one of the worst teams that we've seen in recent history in baseball. A team that was outscored by 252 runs a season ago. And oh, by the way, a team that's without its best player, Trey Mancini, who's battling colon cancer right now. So they don't even have their best player, and you lose to this team 7-2. We'll get into Martin Perez in a second here. But what sticks out to me right now is some of these stars for the Red Sox, or at least guys that have been marketed as stars, guys that are legitimate, talented guys, no doubt about it. They haven't shown up for you. They did not show up today. And let me start with Rafael Devers, because J.D. Martinez is doing his job. He's hitting like he's always hit. But Rafael Devers, to me right now, can we just acknowledge this? He's not ready for the season. He's not ready to go, and I get it. Shortened spring training, if you will, summer camp, whatever the hell they're calling it. But the same thing can be said about J.D. Martinez. He had the short summer camp as well, and I get it that he's a young player, that he's 23 years old. But the bottom line is Devers does not look ready for the season right now. There's no other way around it. He looks a little bit bigger in terms of his physique, but it's unprofessional. He doesn't look ready for the season right now. In the field, two different instances where you can look at Devers and say he doesn't look ready for the 2020 season. I think about last night. He threw the ball over Chavis's head. Now, luckily, Chavis jumps up. He makes a play, and Ron Reinicke was asleep at the wheel. He should have challenged that. He didn't. But nonetheless, that was a horrible throw by Rafael Devers, and Chavis almost bails him out, except Reinicke doesn't challenge him. But again, not great at all by Devers. In fact, not good. And then today in the first inning, he booted the Severino ground ball to third base, which then allowed a run to come in on the very next at bat. So Devers' defense has already hurt you this season, and it hurts you today. And two games so far, there's been a hiccup with Devers defensively in both of them. And that's why I say Devers doesn't seem like he's ready for the season. And in terms of at the plate, he looks lost. He looks absolutely lost. Last night in the first inning, he struck out on 3 pitchers. Slider out of the zone got him. 3 pitches in the first inning. Third inning, he walks okay. Congratulations. Fourth inning, grounds out to third. Fifth inning, lines out to center. Sixth inning, grounds out to center. Tonight, this afternoon, brutal afternoon for Devers. He looks completely lost at the plate to begin the season. And in a 60-game season like this, he's got to wake up. This is supposed to be a guy that is MVP caliber based on the numbers he put up a season ago. Because Devers was so damn good last year. You think about what he did last year. He hit .311, .361 on base percentage, and 32 home runs. So in order for this lineup to be one of the better lineups in all of Major League Baseball, which we think it can do, we think this lineup can be really, really good if the guys at the top actually perform. But the problem right now is there's only one guy at the top of the lineup through two games against bad pitching that's actually performing, and that's J.D. Martinez. When you look at Devers, you think about tonight, first inning, strikes out. Third inning, he's on top of a splitter, grounded out to first. And oh, by the way, that was his best at-bat of the night. Third inning, or I should say sixth inning, leads off. This is when you need runs in the game. Splitter, 87 miles an hour, change up out of the zone. So now he is 0 for 8 on the season, and he has 5 strikeouts. Okay? 5 strikeouts on the season. He had 4 strikeouts this afternoon. So Rafael Devers has to wake up at some point. I understand that some guys get off to slow starts, but right now, he doesn't look disciplined at the plate whatsoever. He's not making contact on the ball whatsoever. Remember last year, every time he hit it, it looked like it was a laser. And then defensively, he has not been ready at all. 2 games, 2 issues for Rafael Devers defensively. So right now, it appears that he just came into the 2020 season and thought, hey, everything's going to be good. Look at what I did a season ago, and look at how he's performing so far this year. Not good whatsoever. So you need that guy to step up, and you need him to step up in a big way. Let me get to Andrew Benintendi. So Andrew Benintendi is somebody that he looks like he's completely searching at the plate. And I know that Rob Bradford mentioned that he made some changes in terms of the way he was working out, etc. He felt like he was too stiff a season ago. Right now, for me, it looks like he's just completely lost at the plate. You go back to last night, his second at bat of the night, he struck out on 4 pitches, horrible at bat. The at bat after that, he goes down on a knee to swing at a splitter, and then he hits the ball to the shift in the middle. He ends up grounding out, but nonetheless, he goes down to a knee. Another at bat in that night, splitter out of the zone he chases, and then he grounded out to second later on in the game, soft to second. And so I just think about this in terms of what Benintendi's been able to do so far this season. He just doesn't seem comfortable at the plate. We've seen on numerous occasions already this season where he's actually gone down on a knee to swing at a ball. So he clearly is not comfortable right now. He clearly is not seeing things. And it felt like something that you were hearing from the Red Sox organizationally throughout this summer camp, if you will. Hey, Andrew Benintendi looks good. Andrew Benintendi looks really good. Well, I haven't seen it through the first couple of games. I have not seen it whatsoever through the first couple of games of the season. And I come back to this with Benintendi. I don't believe he's a leadoff hitter. Reality of the situation is, you look at his numbers a season ago at the leadoff spot, they weren't good. Okay, when you look at it, .256 at leadoff, he was up to .297 when he was in the second spot. So then, if you think about when he was hitting first in the game, when the Red Sox were the visiting team last year, he had a .119 average, and he had a .229 on base percentage. So last year, when Benintendi was taken out of the leadoff spot, he started to perform better. So what I don't understand, and maybe you say, hey, you don't have another candidate on the team right now to hit in the leadoff spot. Well, what I tell Ron Renneke is that this guy's not capable of doing it. Andrew Benintendi is not a natural leadoff hitter. He doesn't seem comfortable doing it. Last season, he got off to a slow start because he didn't like hitting leadoff a year ago. Now he's in the leadoff spot again, and we've seen the results through the first couple of games of the season where Benintendi just looks absolutely atrocious at the plate. There's no other way to describe it. No other way to describe it. See, with Rafael Devers, he just doesn't look disciplined at the plate. He doesn't look disciplined at the plate whatsoever. And in the field, it's embarrassing to see what he's done through the first 2 games of the season. And I love Devers. Absolutely love the kid, but we have to acknowledge the fact that he's 23 years old and he doesn't look ready for the season. That's an issue. When your 23-year-old star doesn't look ready for the season, that's an issue. And then when I look at a guy like Andrew Benintendi, it's not as if he doesn't look like he's ready to play or anything along those lines. What I see with Benintendi is the fact that he just looks completely lost at the plate. And it's not as if you're going up against these unbelievable pitchers. Now, Alex Cobb pitched well tonight, but he's been a mess for the past couple of years. And I know that he's dealt with a lot of injuries and all that, but he looks absolutely lost
at the plate right now. I mean, what is this going down to a knee and missing it? Balls, looking at splitters, like he's swinging at balls that are way out of the zone. It just, at this point, I believe it's going to be more beneficial for not only Andrew Benintendi, but for the organization to push him back in the lineup. I just have never liked him in the leadoff spot. Now, you want to try J.D. Martinez at the two-hole? Works out. J.D. Martinez can hit anywhere in the order, okay? So maybe we overreacted a bit to that during the week. People were upset about J.D. hitting in the two-hole. But if you look across the sport right now, see a lot of great hitters hitting in the two-spot. Chris Bryant does it with the Cubs. Mike Trout does it with the Angels. So a lot of teams are doing this with their best hitter putting him in the two-spot. Fine, I have no issue with that whatsoever. But Andrew Benintendi's not comfortable at the leadoff spot. Bottom line, he's not comfortable whatsoever in the leadoff spot, and we've seen it through the first two games of the season when this Red Sox team has been playing one of, if not the worst teams in all of Major League Baseball. And that's the bigger, broader thing, right? And Brian Barrett with you up until 8, the number 617-779-7937. That's the bigger thing. When you think about what this Red Sox team now has, which is an opportunity to get into the postseason, in my mind, I saw them as a team that could make it into the postseason now, considering the fact that 8 teams from the American League are getting in. All you have to do, based on last year's results, the Rangers would have been in. They would have been the final team. By the way, the Red Sox would have been in a season ago as well. They played 481 baseball. That's not a difficult ask. But when you're playing a team that's essentially a Triple-A team, the Orioles have Jose Iglesias, okay, hitting third in their order. Jose Iglesias is hitting third in the order, and the Red Sox lose today 7-2. 7-2. After this great win last night, you're feeling good about your team, and yeah, you're saying, yeah, it's the Orioles, but no big deal. Well, this team puts it on you today. Pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic to see them come out and respond to a win that way today. Bad. Unbelievably bad. I don't understand why there's no urgency, right? It's not as if this is a long 162-game season, but they come out tonight and they just don't have it. Devers defensively, that's an issue right now. They got to get that into gear, because I'll say this about Alex Cora. Alex Cora is somebody that got Devers in line defensively. Remember what Alex Cora did last year? After the game, they lost against the White Sox, and partially the reason they lost that game is because Devers booted a ball. And Alex Cora, after that game, said, we have to be better. And from that moment on, Devers was good defensively for the remainder of the season. Well, so far this season, Alex Cora, of course, not part of the equation. And so Rafael Devers is out there without Alex Cora, and look at what has happened through the first two games. And also the fact that it doesn't look like he's ready. So I would monitor Devers this season based on the relationship that he had with Alex Cora. Those two guys were close. We know Alex Cora had his ear. We know he listened and respected to Alex Cora. Who's going to be that guy this year? Is it going to be the manager, Ron Renicki? Is Bogarts going to talk to him? By the way, Bogarts hasn't done much this season. I get it, it's two games, but Bogarts pinch hitting tonight, not great from him. But who's going to be the guy that keeps Rafael Devers in check? Because clearly that's something that Alex Cora took on for the past couple of years, and it clearly worked. He helped Rafael Devers get to the level that he was at a season ago when he was one of the better players in Major League Baseball last year. Look at the numbers. It's not disputable. So who's going to be that guy this year with a 23-year-old kid that has the possibility to be a superstar in this sport? Who's going to get on him this year? Because clearly somebody needs to. Now, the other thing I want to mention is this off the top, that somebody's going to have to explain this one to me. Somebody is going to have to explain this one to me because it makes no sense whatsoever. So finally, the Red Sox get themselves back into the game in the sixth inning. You have Mitch Moreland hit a home run, and then you have a little two-out rally with Alex Verdugo, who ended up with 3 hits on the night. He made a base-running error, if you will, but he was bailed out because it was a horrible throw. He should not have gone from first to third, but nonetheless, he got there, and the Red Sox added another run to make it 5-2. And then after that, Bogarts pinch hits, and what a horrible at-bat for Bogarts. Strikes out on 3 pitches. 99-mile-an-hour fastball. Then he fouled off a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. He looked at the first one, and then he struck out on an 87-mile-an-hour slider. Brutal at bat. He looked awful. Coming off the bench as a pinch hitter, he looked horrible. Bottom line, he looked horrible. But nonetheless, you got yourself back into the game 5-2, right? So you're right there. In the seventh inning, you know who Ron Renicki brings in? Dylan Covey. What is that about? 7.98 ERA a season ago. This is a guy that you just got from the Tampa Bay Rays, who, by the way, signed a minor league deal with the Rays, and then they traded him here in the division. They traded him in the division, which tells you what the Rays think about the guy. Maybe Chaim Bloom thinks there's something in him. Great, But why don't you go to one of your good relievers there? Where's Matt Barnes? Where is Matt Barnes? That guy struck out 15 guys per nine innings a season ago. How the hell is Dylan Covey getting the ball in the seventh inning? Somebody's going to need to explain that one to me. It makes no sense. How is he getting the ball in the seventh inning? It's a 5-2 game. You're right there, and guess what happens? Oh, well, the Orioles added two runs. The Orioles decided they were going to add two runs because Dylan Covey decided to give it up. Iglesias singled on a fastball, then Santander hammers a curve, and that makes it 7-0 right then and there. So you felt like you're back in the game. It's 5-2. At that point in the sixth inning, I felt like the Red Sox were going to win the game. As poorly as they played up until that particular point, in terms of the pitching with Martin Perez, in terms of some of the stuff in the field with Rafael Devers, you felt like at that point in time, even with the Bogart strikeout there in the seventh inning, you felt like, okay, all right, you're going to find a way to win this game. And then Dylan Covey comes out of the bullpen. Somebody needs to explain to me why Ron Renicke in the seventh inning went to Dylan Covey, 617-779-7937. And this is a guy in Dylan Covey that none of us knew who he was before the week started, right? And before that they made this move for Dylan Covey, everyone's like, who the hell is Dylan Covey? You had to Google who the hell is Dylan Covey. And if you look at Dylan Covey and you go to his baseball reference page, you're not going to be very impressed. Because in 17 in Chicago, he had a 771 ERA. In 18 in Chicago, he had a 518 ERA. And in 19 in Chicago, he had a 798 ERA. And in the second game of the season, when the Red Sox are down 5-2, they just kind of picked up some momentum in the ballgame by getting two runs, because up until that point in time, Alex Cobb was shutting them down. They had no answer for Alex Cobb whatsoever. At that point in time, guess what happens? Well, yeah, you know what we'll do? You know what I think the move is here? Yeah, let's go to Dylan Covey. Yeah, let's go with the Covey guy who we just got this week, who has no track record of success whatsoever. We know that we need to win these games before the Red Sox. Eh, let's go with the Covey guy. What the hell is that? Ron Reinecke is going to have to explain that one after the game, because I have no idea. That seemed like a clueless move to go with Dylan Covey. That's almost like what Alex Cora did last year when all of a sudden this Chris Owings guy showed up out of nowhere, DFA'd by the Royals, and all of a sudden he's hitting leadoff at a game where the Red Sox were still in the race. But you're playing a Baltimore Orioles team that outside of the Detroit Tigers is the worst team in the American League. And heck, they may be worse than the Detroit Tigers. And if you're going to be one of these eight teams that gets into the postseason, and I believe that's where the Red Sox should be, they have enough talent offensively to be able to get that one of those eight spots. I'm not telling you you have to win the division. You're not near the Yankees level right now. The Yankees are so much better than the Red Sox right now. I mean, they're throwing out Gerrit Cole in their opener, right? So, and when you look at it, it's not close, right? But the Red Sox right now have a good enough team from an offensive perspective to be able to compete. And when you don't win games against the Baltimore Orioles, it is completely costly. You felt like coming into this season, what do they have, 10 games against the Orioles? You need to win 8 or 9 of them. So now you already lost one of those games against the Orioles this season. You've already dropped one of them, and it's the second game of the season. The second game of the season is the one you drop. You would figure that after the win last night, the Red Sox would be fired up to get back at it today. Everybody was hitting the baseball last night, with the exception of Benintendi and Devers, really. Everybody else was hitting the baseball. And today, nobody's ready to go, with the exception of like J.D. Martinez. And in fact, I'll give the bottom of the lineup guys credit. Verdugo had 3 hits. He looked good at the plate. I don't know what the hell was going on with him and the umpire. So apparently he thought there was a balk or something. And then he tried to move up, like, during the dead ball. I don't know what the hell was going on with Verdugo. I don't know what's going on. He did end up with 3 hits, and he was very eager to get that first ball, or the ball for his first Red Sox hit of the season. But he had a good game, no doubt about that, in terms of what he did at the plate. You look at a guy like Jackie Bradley Jr., he's playing well to begin the season. It made a couple of really nice catches out there, had a couple of nice hits, and over the past couple of days has delivered in terms of a couple of hits. Now, he did look awful in that last at-bat where he threw his bat basically to Chris Davis. That's the Jackie Bradley Jr. we've all come to love. But when I look at this guy, Martin Perez, today, so one of the things I was thinking to myself is, all right, 472 ERA in his career, 148 career whip, which is horrendous. Last year in Minnesota, 512 ERA, 152 whip, which was the worst in all of Major League Baseball. The year prior to that, 622 ERA. So I thought to myself, all right, Give him a chance. Let's see what he can do. Did Chaim Bloom identify something with the player, right? Because we've seen it on the other side with a guy like Peraza. We've heard that what Peraza's done at the plate, they think they can make this little adjustment where he uses a leg kick, right? So that's supposed to be the difference with Peraza. Hey, he's got this leg kick. It's all going to work out for Peraza. And he had four hits last night, right? So would it be something similar with Perez, where they just felt like, okay, the player's undervalued. We just need to find something with him. We just need to find little something to alter, and he's going to pitch at a high level. Well, not tonight. Clearly not tonight. I get it. It's not a big deal. 1 year, $6 million. But if you look at the first inning, gets off to a horrible start. Hayes, the two-seam fastball, singles with the shift on. This happened twice to the Red Sox, where they hit it where the players weren't tonight. Alberto doubles on a 92-mile-an-hour fastball middle-middle. He then strikes out Iglesias, and then Santander pops out to Verdugo. So you're thinking, okay, maybe they get out of the jam. But then Nunez hammers a single middle-middle. This guy does not have good enough stuff to put the ball middle-middle off the wall. 2-0 right there. 2-0 right there. And that's one of the only guys in that lineup you really have to be worried about because he has power. Does Nunez 31 home runs a season ago? And that's the guy that gets you. So then he throws one in the dirt, which allows Nunez to go to third. Then Severino hits a slow roller, and that's when Devers boots it to make it 3-0. So, but if he doesn't have the wild pitch prior to that, Perez, well, then the run doesn't come in. And then in the second inning, it gets worse. Valleca singles with no one at second base. This happened twice to the Red Sox. I don't know what's going on. The shifts today did not work for the Red Sox whatsoever. And then he walks Mullins on four pitches, does Perez. Mullins is the nine-hitter. The nine-hitter. He walked the nine-hitter on four pitches. Like, that's one of the guys where you can miss, and they're not going to do a lot of damage to it. And especially the nine-hitter on the Baltimore Orioles, and he walked the nine-hitter on four pitches. Inexcusable. I can't believe it. Four pitches, he walked the damn nine-hitter. How do you do that? Then Hayes pops out. Alberto hammers a single on a changeup. Too much of the plate again. Valleca scores. That makes it 4-0. And then Iglesias singles on a curveball to make it 5-0. At that particular point in time, he did end up going a couple more innings, but 45 pitches through two innings, six hits, four earned. He did settle down after that. Maybe that's the one silver lining you take as it pertains to Perez's outing. It seemed like he was not using his fastball at all early in the game, which I could kind of understand why, because he doesn't have much of a fastball, but he just seemed like tonight in the first two innings, or I should say today, I keep saying tonight, but in the first two innings of the game, it felt like he had no command whatsoever. And evidence is that is when he's missing, they're hammering the ball, and he walked a nine-hitter on four pitches. It's very difficult to walk a nine-hitter on four pitches. So Perez, he just looked like he didn't have it from the beginning of the game. So look, I'll give him another start in terms of seeing what this guy can do. The one benefit you did get from Perez is the fact that, all right, after those first two horrible innings, he did bounce back and give you three scoreless innings and gave you a chance at least to come back in the ball game. But it's just the way that he got off to such a horrible start. You look up and you're down 5-0 after the second inning of the game. You're thinking to yourself, what the hell's going on if you're the Red Sox? And Perez just couldn't find it. And he was really lucky to get out of it the way he did. I mean, because he had the infield fly situation, and you were able to double up the guy at second base. I forget who it could have been, Santander, whoever was at second there. You're able to double him up. So you really dodged a bullet early in that game because it could have been a lot worse for the Red Sox at that particular point in time. But with Martin Perez, I didn't have high expectations, obviously, for the player coming into the season, considering he had the worst whip in all of Major League Baseball a season ago. But my thought process was, okay, I'll give these guys an opportunity. I'll give these guys a chance because maybe it's something that Chaim Bloom has seen in them that other people undervalued. We've seen that happen with, and I'm not saying that this is the be-all, end-all, but we've seen it happen with Peraza in the first game where he had four hits. We saw Kevin Pillar come up. He's on a cheap deal, and he played well last night with the three hits, and he made the incredible play in right field. So you started to feel, okay, maybe there's something with Perez. And I'm not judging those guys by one game of the season, but I'm just saying maybe there was something with Perez. But with Perez, the thing that jumped off the screen at me tonight is the fact that he was in a position where it just felt like he was completely uncomfortable on the mound and he didn't have command. And here's the issue. With a guy like Martin Perez or a guy like Ryan Weber, if those type of guys don't have command, you're in for a long night or a long afternoon, whatever the case is. You're in for a long, long afternoon in the case of Perez because you don't have, this isn't Chris Sale. Prime Chris Sale comes out there. Yeah, he can miss his spot with his slider. Guys are still missing because the stuff is that devastating. But when a guy like Weber or a guy like Martin Perez, and oh, by the way, Weber goes tomorrow. Think about that. You're sending out Ryan Weber to the mound, who I get it. He had a great summer camp and a great spring training, etc. But you're sending Ryan Weber to the mound tomorrow for an opportunity to make sure you take two out of three from the Baltimore Orioles. That's who's going to the mound. Ryan Weber, a guy, by the way, that just made his first opening day roster of his career. Hey, congratulations to him. But you have a lot of faith going into a situation on Sunday afternoon where you have to win to make sure you take two of three from the Baltimore Orioles, and Ryan Weber's on the mound. I don't feel incredibly confident in that particular situation. But getting back to the original point as it pertains to both Weber and Martin Perez, when those guys don't have control, all bets are off. Those guys are going to get racked because they don't have the stuff to be able to overwhelm lineups. And we saw it with Perez in those first two innings when he couldn't locate his stuff. Guys were just taking advantage of him. And quite frankly, at times, he was missing out of the zone and the Orioles were getting to it. So that's a massive issue. You're missing out of the zone and they think, oh, that's so meaty that I want to get after it. The Baltimore Orioles lit up Martin Perez for 5 runs and 4 of them earned. I get it. Devers booted a ball, but you also look at the situation that Perez, the batter before that, he threw a ball into the dirt on a wild pitch, which allowed the runner to advance. So really nothing good to take out of this one from the Red Sox. I guess if you're looking for a silver lining, J.D. Martinez is still an absolute monster, but we expected that to be the case entering the season. And the fact that Alex Verdugo had 3 hits in his debut as a Red Sox. And I don't know, I still have no idea what the hell was going on there. I mean, I have an idea of what was going on. He was upset. He thought there was a box. So then he moved up a base on a dead ball. But then him and the umpire are arguing. Then it looked like he left the dugout and he was back in the dugout. I don't know what the hell was going on with Verdugo tonight. Looked like he absolutely lost his mind out there. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you until 8 o'clock. What did you make of the Red Sox loss to the Orioles this evening? How worried are you about this team going forward? 617-779-7937, and we'll get you a trending in just a second here on WEI.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
Ron, only 2 games in, obviously, but 2 of your key batters are kind of struggling to start the season. Benny and obviously Rappy with the 4 strikeouts today. Anything you're seeing from them pressing or anything like that?
Well, I think you always press, especially at the beginning of the season. These guys were both swinging the bat well in preseason, Benny especially. But Devers was too. And so you start the season, you think you're going to just come right out and continue to get a lot of hits. And then all of a sudden you get through the first game with no hits, and then you start pressing a little, trying to get that first hit. And once they get them, I think they'll relax and be the hitters that we know. But when you press, you chase balls out of the zone. We know, especially with Devers, that's something he is a guy that's you would probably call a wild swinger. And when he gets too aggressive, he swings out of the zone too much. And I know he can hit those pitches at times, but it still makes it difficult. So we need to get him back in the zone. Benny will be fine. He hit the one line drive that, you know, you think all of a sudden, okay, you got his first hit and the guy's standing right there. But they'll both be fine.
All right, that's the manager of the Red Sox, Ron Radecki. I didn't exactly think that line out was a frozen rope or anything along those lines that Andrew Benintendi hit. But my thing with Benintendi is just get him out of the leadoff spot. He's not comfortable there. Look at the batting average. It dropped 24 points last season when he was hitting leadoff. He was at 290. He went to 266 in terms of his total numbers last year. If you look at the leadoff spot numbers, overall as a leadoff hitter last year, 256. He was 297 other than that, or I should say in the two hole. So when he was the first hitter of the game, he was horrible. 119 batting average. So in my mind, I just don't understand this, right? So if a guy is not good in a certain place in the lineup, why are we coming back and putting that guy in the same position this season? That to me is just what makes no sense whatsoever. And the other thing I would say that I need to know is why the hell was Dylan Covey the guy that you came out with in the seventh inning? You're in that baseball game. You just cut it to 5-2. You cut the game to 5-2. And for some inexplicable reason, the guy you go to out of the bullpen is Dylan Covey, who had a 7.98 ERA last season, who the Rays just signed to a minor league contract and traded them to you in the division, which tells you what they think of the player. That, to me, was an atrocious decision by the manager tonight. Why is Covey the guy coming out for the seventh inning when you're back in the ballgame? That irritated me tonight. Okay, this is 60 games. You have to be able to beat teams like the Baltimore Orioles. You have to sweep teams like the Baltimore Orioles. Why are you making decisions like that? And my whole thing about Benintendi is, let's put guys in position where they're comfortable. Clearly, Andrew Benintendi just doesn't seem comfortable when he hits in the leadoff spot. So why are we putting him back in the leadoff spot? And Ron Radecki references the fact that Andrew Benintendi looked great during the summer camp. And I heard a lot of that coming out of the Red Sox. Hey, Andrew Benintendi, this could be the year. It looks like Andrew Benintendi's going to take off. He's looking better in summer camp, etc. He lost some weight so he could be more athletic again, because last year he tried to bulk up and he found that, okay, I'm too stiff. So he tried to make some adjustments. So I'm not disputing the fact that he was good in summer camp. I believe him. But then you put him back in the leadoff spot at the season. Like, you're wondering why this is happening, and he looks so lost. He's not comfortable hitting leadoff. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Wally in Fall River. Wally, what's up?
Yeah, what's up, Brian? Now, this is a very short season. You don't have a lot of breathing room. You get off to a bad start, you're going to be buried early. But my overall analysis, the Red Sox are going to have to batch their way to playoff spot. They're going to have to win a lot of 11-7, 10-4 games. I mean, you look at this pitching staff, Brian. It's, you know, calling them mediocre is being generous. I mean, you've got Huey, Dewey, and Louie in the rotation. But, you know, it is what it is. We have to face the truth. But Baltimore stinks. We should have won today. Like you said, he puts this guy in. It's, you know. But it's going to have, everything's going to have to click right for the Red Sox. Chaim Bloom's going to have to hope somebody he catches lightning in a bottle with some of these guys on the pitching staff.
Yeah, well, I think that's what he was hoping for with Martin Perez. Now, I'll give him credit that he settled down after that second inning, and maybe that's something you can build on entering his next start, if you will. But tonight was not a good start for Martin Perez. Not a good start, bottom line. And the issue with Perez is you're going to need him to eat up some innings, because now the fact that you have Eduardo Rodriguez at a situation where we don't know when he's going to be able to return. And I know he's going to be evaluated a week from, what was it, Thursday when they made the announcement. But he's dealing with an issue as a complication with coronavirus due to his heart. Rob Bradford had the reporting. So we really have no idea when Eduardo Rodriguez is going to be able to go, because he was gassed after throwing a bullpen. So they may reevaluate him, say things look good, but then he's got to build up to actually be able to contribute. And that's a guy that you were depending on in Erod. Most starts he goes out there to eat up six innings. So now with Martin Perez, it makes it imperative that he starts eating up some innings. And I give him credit for making it five innings, because after the second inning, I thought, no way this guy's making it five innings tonight, but he's going to have to be somebody that, unfortunately, this team needs to rely on to get you through some games. Now, the one thing I will say in defense of Martin Perez is when the game is 5-2, the Sox have an opportunity to win that baseball game. They do, and Bogaerts pinch hit in that inning, in the sixth inning, had an opportunity. He had an awful at-bat. Bottom line, he had a horrible at-bat. Three straight pitches, he goes down in that particular scenario, right? So he had an opportunity, did the Red Sox, and Bogaerts in particular, to come back in that baseball game, and they didn't. And then, of course, Renicki makes the decision to go to Dylan Covey. I still have no idea what the hell that was. 617-779-7937 is the number. And the other thing I'd say about Benintendi, real quickly, is this isn't like Ron Renicki is inheriting a new team. Ron Renicki was here. He was the bench coach last year. He saw that Benintendi wasn't comfortable in the leadoff spot a year ago, and yet he wants him in the leadoff spot. Now, I understand it's one game for Verdugo, and we'll see if he's in the lineup every day because they do have Kevin Pillar, but that's definitely a candidate. I just don't want Benintendi in the leadoff spot anymore because, quite frankly, I don't think you're doing the player any favors having him hit there. And this is a huge season for Benintendi based on his value going forward. Think about his power numbers have gone down each of the past three seasons. He went from 20 homers in 17 to 16 home runs at 18, and in 19, 13 home runs. And this is a guy last year that Benintendi, he lost his confidence. Remember, at one point, they were not playing him against lefties, and he was considered to be this highly touted prospect when he came up. He was the seventh overall pick from Arkansas. The organization was really high on the player, and he lost his confidence at times last season. And he thought by shedding some pounds, so to speak, not being so bulky, would actually help him. And we're off to an awful start so far for Benintendi. And I get it, it's two games, but I just feel like this can be avoidable if you don't put him in that leadoff spot. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you up until about 8 o'clock. Let's get to Mike. He is in North Providence. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, I mean, you kind of stole the march on me with Verdugo. I mean, I personally would really consider putting Verdugo in the leadoff spot. To take a lot of this is, you can just see Verdugo, he's playing free and easy. He's a kid. I mean, you see that thing that happened at third base. He's not thinking. He's not overthinking the game. He's just playing. You want to have whoever's hitting in front of JD to take advantage of the fact that JD Martinez is in behind him, not Andrew Benintendi, who doesn't want to be batting leadoff to begin with, who it's in his head. And I'd rather have good Benny batting fifth behind Xander, giving him coverage in the lineup, deepening the lineup, than having bad Benny batting leadoff, struggling mentally with the whole concept.
Yeah, Mike, and you said it perfectly right there. I feel like it is mental with the player, and I don't understand why a manager who is with the team last year, I don't know why he would put him in a situation where he knows he's uncomfortable. I can't comprehend the rationale behind that.
I mean, we saw last year with Mookie, the simple fact that they took Mookie out of the leadoff spot and it messed him up, you know? So, I mean, it's just like, you know, some guys want to be in a certain spot. You're going to get good results out of them. So just take the good results you're going to get and put somebody else there. And like for me, Verdugo's not going to be thinking too much, overthinking it. He'll just go out and play. With regards to Covey, that decision just, I mean, when you're dealing with a guy like him who's struggled in the past, who might have potential, you have to have a plan. This is not a guy who's going to go out there and rely on great swing and miss stuff right out of the gates to cover up any sort of miscommunication between him and the catcher. This catcher has no idea what to really call for him. This guy himself doesn't really know what he's supposed to be doing. Your team has to come up with some sort of way to unlock his potential. And if you're going to use him, you should have used him yesterday when you're blowing the other team out, not wheeling him out there in a game you're trying to get back into where you right off the bat, it's just kind of, Renicki's not really showing me much because he's not thinking in that next level about where the mentalities of the players are. I want to use them this way. As if somehow the player is supposed to be like validating his decisions instead of him making good decisions for the player.
Yeah, you would figure, Mike, that you would want to give him a soft landing if you thought you actually may have something in the player down the road, get him into that game last night. And what I don't understand, Mike, is you have these guys that are supposed to be considered high leverage relievers, right? Like a Matt Barnes. Where the hell is he?
Yeah, I mean, these guys need work too. I mean, the key thing with Covey is I can understand wanting to use him, but you want to use him just to get him out there and get a feel for him.
Right.
Last night was the perfect time to do it. It's like there's like something's not firing off in this guy's head the right way when he's making these kinds of moves. And it's just kind of like, I mean, let's give him a chance too. But the bottom line is, you have to make the decisions for the players to put them in the right thing. It's kind of like, it's like if you're the doctor, you're supposed to be making the, or how about this? Like, you know, the lawyer that represents himself as a fool for a client. Even if you're really knowledgeable, you have to have somebody on the outside making decisions for you to know what to do, especially if you deal with guys who are struggling, who have problems, and you're being put into that spot, you can actually bury them.
Yeah. No, it's a good point, Mike, and I appreciate the phone call. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. So, apparently, Covey's already been sent down. Okay. So, Covey's already been sent down. So, Ron Renneke must have gotten in his head that the plan today was to, at some point, get Dylan Covey in the game today. At all costs, let's make sure we get Dylan Covey in the game. I don't get it. I really don't understand it. You're trying to win as many games as you can because it's a shortened season. You're in a rush, and you're playing one of the worst teams in the sport. You have to be able to pick up every win against the Orioles, and you blew an opportunity tonight. I'm not saying you're guaranteed to win the game, right? Because at that point, it's 5-2, but you feel a lot better as a team, the Red Sox do, if you go out there in that seventh inning and Matt Barnes comes onto the mound, who struck out 15 guys per nine innings a season ago. Matt Barnes gets into the game. He strikes out the side or strikes out two or three. You head back to the dugout and you're saying to yourself, all right, let's go. Let's get this back under control. Let's take advantage of this opportunity. Let's win this baseball game. It's 5-2. Let's go. And instead, you're down 7-2. And I'm wondering this as well. How do guys like Matt Barnes and Brandon Workman feel about this? How do guys that actually performed at a relatively high level last year, and I get it, Matt Barnes struggled at times on back-to-back games, etc. Matt Barnes is somebody that wore down in the second half of the season, although he did rebound at the very end of the season. But in the middle portion of the season, it felt like he was overused. But you got to use the guy in a situation like this today. And I understand you're playing the Baltimore Orioles, and you think you can get something from Covey, but you don't know Covey as well as you know Matt Barnes. So if I'm Matt Barnes, I'm pissed off today. Wouldn't you be pissed off today? And wouldn't you be pissed off today if you were a member of that team that's out there and you're looking at, oh, hold on, we just got back to 5-2. This guy we just got, what, at the beginning of the week or whenever it was, a week and a half ago, he's coming into the game? If you're a member of that team right now, wouldn't that upset you? Wouldn't that irritate you that you're in a position to try to come back in a baseball game and the manager is not putting you in the best position to possibly win? I get it. Second day as the manager of the Red Sox, and it felt like last night, in terms of the lineup, everything they did, it worked out. But this is an egregious mistake. I just don't know how you defend putting that guy out there in the seventh inning. It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until 8 o'clock. What do you make of the Red Sox loss to the Orioles? What do you make of the decision Ron Renneke made to put Dylan Covey with a 7.98 ERA out there in the seventh inning? What did you make of that decision? You're listening to Red Sox Review right here on WEI.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hey, so we had a move today that we just did, Dylan Covey. We were going to send to Pawtucket and try to get him stretched out. So we actually liked what we saw today. We had talked about doing this move before the game and actually the last couple days. And so, but I thought he looked good. I thought his off-speed pitches were good. He threw strikes, but he's not built up. We need to get him there. try to extend him out maybe to three innings the next time, and then maybe four after that. And then we'll see what our need is when he gets stretched out, when he's strong.
All right, that's Ron Reneke on Dylan Covey. Brian Barrett with you until 8, 617-779-7937. That makes the decision today even worse. That makes the decision worse. So they actually have a plan for Covey, and you saw it. He pitched two innings today. They actually have a plan for him. He's supposed to be one of these guys that can give you multiple innings out of the bullpen. So that's their plan for the player. Okay, understand that. Good. You have an idea how you can use him. See if you can get him to improve, whatever the case may be. Get him to go extra in terms of 2 to 3 innings rather than just the 2 innings. But what I don't understand and what I don't get from Ron Reneke's perspective, why are you doing that experiment in game 2 of the season against the Orioles when you just cut the game to 5-2? So that's what baffles my mind, and that's what is completely confusing to me about this whole situation is, all right, so you want Dylan Covey to essentially be somebody that can eat up innings during the season. So what that tells me, what they want from Covey is, hey, when we're up big, so if we're up 8-1 in a game, we may ask him to eat a couple of innings. Okay, if we're down big in a game, we may ask him to eat up some innings, right? If it's a situation where we're going with an opener, maybe we give him an opportunity to throw a couple of innings. But to throw him in a situation today, which in my mind is a little bit high leverage, when you just put up 2 runs and you go up 5-2 in the game, and you're now in a place, if you're the Sox, you feel good, especially considering what you have offensively. You feel good that you can come back and win that ball game, and that's when you put the player in. So that, to me, does a disservice to both the player and the team. And more importantly, the team. So Ron Reneke had it in his head prior to the game that I have to get Dylan Covey an opportunity. I have to get Dylan Covey into the game. And in my mind, you don't have time for that. You don't have time to mess around with that particular situation. You can't mess around with it this year. You can't do it. Now, maybe you get away with that in a 162-game season, but you don't get away with it in a season like this where you only have 60 games and you have to take every game you can against the Orioles. Because guess what the reality of the situation is? The rest of the schedule is pretty damn tough. Now, after this series, and by the way, you have to win tomorrow with Ryan Weber on the mound. You got to make sure you win that game so you can take 2 out of 3 in the series. And after that, oh yeah, you get the Mets, who are pretty damn good. You see DeGrom last night? Guy didn't give up a run. They won the game 1-0. Mets are pretty good. I'm not saying they're a World Series contender, but they're pretty good. Oh yeah, then after that, you got to play this team called the Yankees. Right? And you look at the rest of the schedule. Oh, the Phillies are on there. Well, they're not a bad team either. I get they lost to Miami last night, but that team's going to be better. They made some signings in the offseason. You have the Rays in your own division. You have the Blue Jays, who you just lost to in an exhibition game on Tuesday, and in all likelihood would have lost that game on Wednesday as well if that game continued. So the Blue Jays are no slouches. Then you think about the other teams you have in your schedule. The Washington Nationals, who are the reigning defending World Series champions. Oh, yeah. And then you have the Atlanta Braves, who won that division a season ago. So when you look at the Red Sox schedule and you look at what they're up against for the remainder of the season, there are 2 teams on this schedule that, in my mind, you would consider to be layups, games that you have to win. And those 2 teams are this one that you're playing right now, the Baltimore Orioles and the Miami Marlins. And when you take a game like today with a golden opportunity to come back, and look, maybe you never come back. Maybe you just end up like you did today. You don't score another run after the 2 runs you scored in the 6th inning, after, of course, the Moreland home run to start that inning off. And then, of course, later on, Plawecki reaches on that infield single and Verdugo scores, although in my mind that was an error, but you should have made that play. But nonetheless, you cut it to 2 runs there. Maybe the game stays the way it was and you never score another run in that game if you're the Red Sox. But I'd like the opportunity on the other side where whoever comes out for the Orioles in terms of that 7th inning, whether it would have been Castro, Blyer they brought in, maybe they go to Givens a little bit earlier, whatever it is, I would have liked to see that pitcher have to come into a situation when it's 5-2. There's a lot more pressure on you when it's a 5-2 ball game than when it's a 7-2 ball game. And what I felt happened tonight is the team was looking towards the future of this season, to see what they have in Dylan Covey. In particular, the manager was saying, hey, I got to get Dylan Covey into the game.
He looked good.
Yeah, he looked real good. I don't know what he's alluding to there. How did he look good? He just allowed the Orioles to blow the game wide open and go from 5-7 to make it a 7-2 game. So what I felt like Ron Renicke did, and maybe it's not all Ron Renicke, maybe the front office has a say in this, they put that in front of the game today, which to me, that just sits with me wrong as a fan of the team. I want this team to be trying to win each and every game they play. Bottom line, that's what I want to happen. I believe the Red Sox should be one of the 8 teams that makes the playoffs in the American League. Heck, if you're not one of the 8 teams that makes the playoffs in the American League, that's a joke. Considering the amount of money this team spends, considering the amount of talent this team has on the offensive side of things, if you're not one of those 8 teams, that's pathetic. And today, I felt like the manager and the front office, whoever else was in on this decision, they put getting Dylan Covey some big league experience ahead of winning the game today. And that doesn't sit with me well. And if I'm a member of that team right now, I don't know how they're taking this. Right? How are you taking this if you're a member of this team and you felt like, all right, we come back. If you're Mitch Moreland, right, I hit the home run, get us back into the game. Alex Verdugo does some things on the bases, and then Plawecki hits a ground ball to bring a run, and it's 5-2. If you're these guys that are trying to crawl back into the baseball game or crawl back into the game, how do you feel about this tonight? That the manager then went out there and he put in a guy like Dylan Covey. See, if I'm out there, if I'm J.D. Martinez, if I'm Mitch Moreland, I'm like, screw that. Put Barnes on the mound. Barnes, at times last year, was dominant. Barnes in 2018 in the postseason was dominant. If I'm those guys, I'm wondering, where the hell was Matt Barnes? Where the hell was Matt Barnes? Now, I'll address another thing with the manager. 617-779-7937, the number. Brian Barrett with you up until 8 o'clock. I don't have an issue with the Bogarts things. I know a lot of you guys have an issue with Bogarts in terms of he wasn't ready to go in game 2 of the season. Well, they alluded to the fact that he was dealing with a hamstring injury a couple of days ago. And remember, it was reported earlier on in the week that, oh, he is going to be ready to go for the season, but he was dealing with a little bit of a hamstring issue. So I understand that one, right? Because you do, even though you're trying to win every game, and we saw him pinch hit and he didn't deliver, and then he got up again in the ninth inning and he didn't deliver, but you do have to make sure you have Bogarts for the majority of the season. So if you're dealing with a soft tissue, like a hamstring type of situation, and Bogarts just played last night, and you're feeling like, hey, the best way to get this guy to the finish line is to make sure that he's healthy, and we don't want to overtax him or else we could aggravate that hamstring. Because if you aggravate the hamstring, then you're in real jeopardy with Bogarts, right? If Bogarts has to go to the injured list because of some sort of issue with his hamstring, then it's a major issue for the team going forward, right? Because he's a major piece of your lineup. He's your cleanup hitter. He was an MVP candidate a season ago. So if that's the case, then you have a big issue with Xander Bogarts going forward. So I do understand Renicke's thinking on that, and he did say before the game, and he stuck true to his word, that Bogarts was going to be available in a pinch-hitting situation. He was in the seventh inning. He just didn't come through. He had an awful at bat in that seventh inning with an opportunity to put more runs on the board in a 5-2 ball game right there. Runners on the corners, you have an opportunity if you're Bogarts, and he just looked awful in that at bat. Struck out on 3 pitches. A horrible at bat from Xander Bogarts. The first one, the bat's on his shoulder, not ready to go, and then the next two, he was late on a 98-mile-an-hour fastball. I get a lot of people are late on a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, and then he went fishing. So Bogarts just wasn't ready at that particular moment in time. But I don't blame Ron Renicke for not playing Bogarts to begin the game. And quite frankly, this team should be able to win a game against the Baltimore Orioles tonight. Today, they had plenty of opportunities to do it. So it wasn't the fact that Bogarts wasn't in the game for the first 7 innings. That's not the reason you lost the game. Now, if you want to blame the manager for something, blame him on the fact that he didn't use Matt Barnes and he used Dylan Covey. Blame him for that. But the Bogarts thing, I totally understand why you would have to do that and why you would have to protect the player, because I'm sure the player wanted to get out there. But I understand why you have to protect the player, because if you lose Bogarts for any chunk of the season, forget about it. The Red Sox are in a situation where they're not like the Yankees, where if they lose a guy for a little bit of time, they're going to be fine, right? They're not in that situation. This isn't the Red Sox from 2018, so they need all their best guys to be available. And if they honestly feel like this is the best way to keep Bogarts healthy for the majority of the season, then this is what you have to do. You have to be able to rest him at certain times, especially considering the fact that this isn't a situation where it's Kawhi Leonard in the NBA or LeBron James in the NBA where it's load management. No, this is actually, hey, we have to keep an eye on this thing because hamstrings are funny. Hamstrings, you aggravate a hamstring, you could be dealing with that for a whole season. And you don't want to see that happen to your shortstop, who's making over $200 million. Not, of course, all this year, but he just signed that $2 million extension. So I did not have an issue with Renicky not playing Bogarts, especially considering the fact he was dealing with a hamstring issue. Now, if Bogarts was fine and he was 100% healthy at the beginning of the season, that's a different scenario. But in this particular case, I don't blame Renicky for that. Covey, yes, I blame Renicky for that. Bogarts, I don't. Although I would like Bogarts when he's coming in the seventh inning. How about, or I should say in the sixth inning, rather. How about coming up with a better at bat than you did against Castro? I mean, that's something that you need. Bogarts is supposed to be the leader of this team, right? I know that we had this discussion on this very station for a week or so. Who's the face of Boston sports, etc. Bogarts is supposed to be the best player on this team, and he's supposed to be the leader on this team, although J.D. Martinez is clearly the best hitter on this team. But this is supposed to be Bogarts' team, and when you have an opportunity tonight to come through in that seventh inning, you need Bogarts to come through. Another thing I would point out, or at least put together a competent at-bat, because it's baseball, and anything can happen in terms of you may line one and it goes right to the third baseman. I understand that, but at least put together a quality at-bat. And Bogarts did not give you a quality at-bat when he came into the game to pinch hit. That's what I have an issue with is, come on, let's be ready to go here. Let's get up there. If you're the leader of the team, you're the guy that's in charge of everything there, at least put together a decent at-bat. And the other thing I would say with Bogarts is Bogarts may have to take on a role that Alex Cora is the guy that called out Rafael Devers after he made that error against the White Sox last year, and that kind of turned Devers' season around. And I'm wondering if Bogarts is going to be that guy, because we know they're really good friends. So can Bogarts hold Devers accountable to try to get Devers to pick it up from a defensive perspective? Offensively, he's just chasing a lot of stuff, and that's the type of stuff that Devers does, is he swings at bad pitches, and all of a sudden it's a home run. So we've seen him do this before, but right now he looks like he's searching a little bit too much at the plate. But the more concerning thing to me is his defense looks sloppy through the first couple of games of the season. Can we all acknowledge that? He doesn't look ready, and defensively, he looks like the guy that we saw at the beginning of last season, which was a problem until Alex Cora called him out. So if somebody's going to hold him accountable on this team, it would be, in my mind, the guy that is supposed to be the face of the franchise right now, which is Xander Bogarts, who just got the $200 million contract, what, at the beginning of last season. He's the guy that has to hold Devers accountable. All right, 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you up until 8 o'clock. What did you make of the Red Sox loss to the Orioles? Plus, we will get into some bigger, broader topics with the Red Sox, including the Mookie Betts trade that occurred this week. And Tom Warner had some interesting comments on that. We'll get into it in just a little bit here on WEI.
Hey, so we had a move today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.